Welcome to Fire Protection Insights, the fire safety podcast brought to you by Ferguson Fire and Fabrication, the leader in fire protection innovation.
What if fire sprinkler design could be faster, smarter, and more accurate without ever leaving Revit? Hi, I'm Justin Hassel, Business Development Manager at Ferguson Fire and Fabrication. In today's episode, we're taking a deep dive into the newest enhancements in MicroBIM Fire, the powerful software transforming how fire protection engineers design and deliver projects. From automation tools that simplify design and calculations to enhance coordination and improve stock listing accuracy, MicroBIM Fire continues to redefine what's possible inside Revit. My guest is Micah Davis, Senior Manager of Operations at Ferguson Fire Design. Mike is here to break down how these new features work, what they mean for workflow, and how they help fire professionals save time, reduce errors, and deliver high-quality designs. So, Micah, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here, Justin. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Anytime. I know we were together not too long ago talking about emerging technologies, where the future's going in our industry with regards to software, product development, and things of that nature. So I wanted to bring MicroBIM back and let's have some further discussion on what's changed since then, where the idea, where the software's going, some of the new features. So I guess for some of the new listeners, can you kind of dive in and let them know what MicroBIM Fire is and just kind of give us a background on where it's going in our industry as far as fire-specific design.
Yeah, right on. I'm happy to talk about it. Very excited about MicroBIM and the opportunities it's given us for advancements in design technologies for fire sprinkler systems. So essentially, MicroBIM Fire is a plug-in for the Revit, the Autodesk Revit BIM collaboration environment. So we plug in fire sprinkler specific design tools on top of the Revit tools that are already available. So we're using essentially Revit content. We're using Revit elements, sprinklers, Revit elements for fittings and pipe. And then we're providing tools that allow designers to both model and calculate and coordinate and stock list those systems inside of Revit. And we're really streamlining those things. So MicroBIM has been around for about 10 years now and have a great set of tools. We're very excited about the next version coming out because we're really taking big leaps in the direction of automation and some other things that make our jobs so much easier as fire sprinkler designers.
That's cool. So I did some research. Was this originally called Pipe Fab?
It was. Yeah, absolutely. Development started in Australia. So there was a design firm down there. They were trying to use Revit for design and use the native tools that are in Revit and just realized it was you can't quite get there. I mean, Revit's good for a lot of things. It just doesn't help us get that last mile for the fire sprinkler. I mean, you can draw the pipes and the fittings, but you just can't get to the stock listing or the calculations or those kind of things. They realized, hey, we can work this out. The tools that were available for Revit at the time were not that great. And so they started building their own. And so that's how it started. Started as PipeFab. When we were preparing to introduce it to the U.S. market, we realized there was already a PipeFab on the market. That trade name was already being used. So we made the pivot to MicroBIM Fire. And long-term goals, we chose MicroBIM because long-term goals is to maybe expand outside of fire industry to support other disciplines as well. But definitely the starting point for us is fire sprinkler design.
Awesome. So every time I research something now, and I think probably most people today do this, but I go on any type of like AI-oriented question response type of platform, and I plug in some ideas, right? And I did a comparison. You know, where does MicroBIM sit in the industry today compared to other software suites? And the number one thing that stood out that it said its strengths is automation. So automation seems to be one of the biggest headlines for this. How is MicroBIM Fire improving automation across the design, hydraulic calculation, and stock listing within Revit?
That is specifically our focus, actually. We are really doubling down on automation, and we feel like that's where the greatest advancements are going to come for fire sprinkler design. So that's where we're focusing our efforts. Currently, one of the things that we're doing is we are making our sprinkler layout and piping layout tools more robust through automation. So we actually provide the user with some very significant tools that really facilitate the automated layout of sprinklers and the automated routing of piping, which, you know, a lot of design programs have always had that, or they have had that in the past. But the advantage that we have being in the Revit environment is that we have information about the other elements that are in the space we're trying to lay out. So we have information about where the ceiling tiles are located specifically in the model. We have information about where the lights and the diffusers and the speakers and the fire alarm devices and all of those things that are in the ceiling. We have that information in the Revit model. And so our automated tools don't just take into account the spacing requirements and the walls of the space, but they also take into account the ceiling configuration, the ceiling grid layout, the lighting.
All the other trades almost, right?
Yeah, all of those things.
In other words, you're doing head layouts, right? And you're asking it to automate system routing, and it's taking into account other trades and other aspects of the drawing.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. Wow. Yep, so we're able to do that. And of course, this is a developing technology for us. So we have more work to do for all of the opportunities we have to automate that design. But we definitely have made huge improvements, very, very, very big, significant gains in our ability to do that. And for the piping layout, same way, where we're able to more effectively automate those pipe routing.
So I feel like, you know, the traditional method as I remember it, and it may still be relevant today, is, you know, it's very manual, it's very hands-on, and then you're importing in your clash detections, you're looking at your clashes, and then you're going back and you're, you know, redoing drawings, redoing pipe routing. And it sounds like with this in place, you're kind of eliminating a lot of those mistakes before you even get to the full coordination.
Yeah, absolutely. We're trying to give the designer a big head start with it. I mean, that's the thing. So with the automated layout, you know, we're certainly not to a point yet where it'll do it perfectly the first time. So you're probably getting about 80-90% of your layout, and then you're going back through and evaluating it. What these opportunities does, just tagging on to that automation piece, is we're able to take it even further, because now that we have the information about the spacing of the sprinkler heads and we have the information about the walls in the space, we're able to actually calculate for the designer and capture the spacing for each sprinkler. So when it comes time to do your calculations, you don't have to determine what your coverage area for each sprinkler in your design area is. It has automatically captured that information during the layout process. When we talk about automation, that's really what we're trying to do, is we're trying to take all of this information that's available to us in Revit, and we're trying to capture it at the right times and make good use of it in the processes that we do, so that the user doesn't have to manually put that information in at later steps in the process.
And that's the point, right? Like, this stuff isn't really technical. Let's get this out of the way using automation, and let's get to the technical stuff where, you know, you or I need to engage with regards to code aspects and whatnot.
Yeah, absolutely.
So one of the things that I have noted here, so you guys have a lot of exciting updates around stock listing. So what changes have been made to improve the accuracy and streamline the process with that?
That's really been one of MicroBIM's strengths from the beginning. That's actually how the whole software got started in the first place. With the design firm that started this, the group that started this developing the software, it was around stock listing that they were really struggling. Like, they could use other tools to get the calculations done. They could essentially do all the modeling inside of Revit without any tools. But they realized we can't really get good stock lists out of the program. So that's really where it started. So because that was the basis, that's really where the software excels. One of the things we've really done with the new version that we have coming out, which we're referring to as MicroBIM Fire X. So MBFX is what we refer to the new version as. And we've really streamlined the steps involved in the stock listing process. So whereas in our previous versions, all of the tools were there and they were very effective, but there were multiple instances where you go to this tool and you use it, and then you go to this tool and you use it. And so you've got these kind of disjointed steps that you have to take to get to the final product of the stock list. So in the new version, what we've done is we've kind of taken all of those steps and we've combined them into one tool and one workflow. And so it really streamlines and makes the process more intuitive for the designer, which was another thing we recognized we needed to improve on. And it also presents it in a way where you can capture these steps effectively. And one of the big pieces to that steps is a QC step that we actually built into the workflow. So MicroBIM Fire automatically will capture quality control issues and present them to the user for them to address. Things like sprinkler heads that aren't connected or pipe ends that don't have connections on them and different things like that. We actually present those to the user in the steps.
Okay. So it's not only running the process, doing the automations, but it's also verifying at the same time, right? Okay, great. And, you know, fire protection design, a lot of moving parts, right? And a lot of what you just explained improves workflow efficiency. And to reiterate again, this is all within Revit, right?
That's correct. Yep, everything happens inside of Revit. We've got some windows and some tools that pop up that give you dialog boxes to work through. That just kind of presents the steps to you in order. But everything's done inside of Revit. Everything's produced from Revit. Our calculation tool in the past, so it's always been inside of Revit and it continues to be inside of Revit. We do, however, give the user the option to open our calculations with the standalone tool if there's some tweaking they want to do outside of Revit. It just makes it easier for the user sometimes to make those tweaks and then come back into the model. But you can do it both ways. You can do it inside of Revit and never leave Revit, and it's effective. Or you can open the calculation file outside of Revit, and both of them are effective.
Gotcha. So I guess the question would be, and just so we kind of give an idea of the learning curve per se, or the ramp up, right? So if you've got engineers who are used to doing things manually, or are used to using a lot of tools, a lot of programs to collaborate, to do a project, what kind of learning curve would be expected to kind of adopt or grow into MicroBIM? Is it something that takes time? Is it something you think can be picked up quickly? Because you've migrated into it yourself, you know, so you kind of work through the experience using other platforms before. And I guess still today, right? You use multiple platforms today.
Sure.
Yeah. So what do you, if you had to talk to someone who, let's just say, is not as seasoned, a little intimidated by the aspect of even working in Revit, what kind of advice would you give, or what expectations should they have?
That tend to be one of the biggest obstacles that we hear from potential customers about moving into the platform is moving into Revit itself. That's really where the challenge lies. MicroBIM is simply a set of tools that install on top of Revit, and those tools are very similar to any other sprinkler design software. So if you know how to use other sprinkler design softwares, it's very easy to pick up MicroBIM because you're doing the same types of processes. You're just clicking different buttons to do it inside of MicroBIM. The challenge is if the person learning it is not already familiar with Revit. And so learning Revit is a challenge. I mean, it's a big software. It's got a lot to it. But folks in our industry and in you know, design-minded people, it's certainly something they can pick up. And we're actually in the process of working on some additional training opportunities for users who are considering MicroBIM or considering making a transition to Revit for design, fire sprinkler design. And so we can support that transition with some streamlined tools. As a fire sprinkler designer, we don't have to know everything that Revit can do. We just need to know what's related to our work. And so that's kind of what we're trying to tailor that training program to.
And I think it's because when you open Revit and you see all the other MEP groups and everything and all the other tools in there, it's like, okay, where does a fire protection designer live? Where is home base for me, right? And when we open up these other software suites, it's just very much, it's more focused around us, less focus around the other trades per se. But I think you're right. Like if we're all working in the same platform one day, which I feel like Revit's probably where we're all going.
That's right.
I think it's relevant from the other, you know, software companies out here. They're all migrating that way as well. Sooner or later, we're all going to have to get familiar with it. And our industry as a whole, as we know, we're always kind of the last to the party with regards to either, you know, the software we're using or even being on site today. So I think we're probably just slow to adopt, but it seems like Revit is probably more familiar in offices today than it was 5-10 years ago.
Yeah,
so as far as onboarding, I would say get across that hurdle, right? get used to the MicroBIM set of tools. And then it sounds like from the automation processes and all of that stuff, this is kind of where you'd want to live, I think, eventually, and or grow into. So you hit on it briefly just a minute ago, and I want to kind of expand a little more. What opportunities do you have for support with regards to new users, experienced users, so they can get the most kind of out of the program?
Yeah. So right now we have a very well-developed support site that kind of goes through all of the tools that are available with MicroBIM and demonstrates their use and gives there's a knowledge base where for common issues or common struggles that our users have. There is a ticketing system, so you can submit a ticket to get support. But really the biggest strength of our current setup is you have direct access to both me as a salesperson for MicroBIM and a user, an effective user of the software. But you also have access to the developers should you need further support. And so right now we handle a lot of that growth process with some significant one-on-one help. So if a user is trying to get up to speed, we'll have them go through our user manuals, go through our support site, and then also spend time with them on video calls, kind of walking them through some steps to make sure they get to where they need to be. And so that's been effective up to this point. We are, however, anticipating and seeing our user base grow and recognizing it will be difficult to continue to support that kind of one-on-one help all the time. We are really focused hard on developing our training offerings. And so we're in the process right now of developing, as I mentioned, the Revit training that can go along with supporting a transition into Revit for the fire sprinkler design. And then there'll be the actual training, there'll be training provided for the MicroBIM tools. And those will be step-by-step, very effective training modules that users could have access to and be able to learn the system from there. So that's a work in progress. We have some of it available now, but it's not completely filled out, but we'll be done with it in the very near future.
So given that said, you work with, I forget, I always lose count of how many designers we have on staff now, but you work with a slew of designers, some of which using MicroBIM, including yourself. Are there any latest real world examples that you have from a MicroBIM experience, how these enhancements and, some of these new features have improved saving time or accuracy, like you mentioned, with regards to a design?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things I always tell people about designing in Revit, and in really any design platform, is to me, it's less about the tool and more about the designer. And so what I mean by that is, I don't sell the advantage of MicroBIM as being it's going to make you significantly faster as a designer, right? Because really that's more up to the abilities of the designer. If you're a quality designer, you can design the same speed with pretty much any of the platforms that you're familiar with. Really the advantage is being in the same environment that the rest of the construction industry is in. And that you kind of referred to that earlier. That's where mechanical trades are in. That's where the plumbing trades are in. That's where architects and engineers and structural engineers have been for decade plus, And so now we're in the same BIM environment as these other trades. And so this is where we've seen the most advantages recently. So one job in particular, it's a large cold storage warehouse. We're doing, I think this one has 7 pre-action systems. And the challenge of this job was that our customer, the customer we're doing design for, was invited late to the job, even more so than what is typical for fire sprinkler. So there was another contractor that was on the job to begin with, and they dropped out and said, now our customer took it on. And so by the time we're working on design, a very large project, and we need to be on site in a month and a half, I think was the time frame at the time. And so just a very tall order with fire sprinkler design in general, but especially when you're dealing with something slightly more complicated like the pre-action systems that are in these cold storage warehouses. So first of all, being in the Revit environment allowed us to hit the ground running. So there wasn't a lot of converting the files to some other format and getting it moved into our software and all that kind of stuff. We could just get our Revit model built, link in the models, and then start go. So that was a huge advantage to begin with. But then having because Revit is building a digital representation of the physical building. The pipe, fittings, sprinkler heads, all of these things are accurate to what's actually installed if it's modeled correctly. And so when it came down to stock list, it really streamlines that process because everything's already there. It's not, the system is not having to cut in fittings and figure takeouts and do all that kind of stuff. It's already in the model. So as long as we modeled it accurately, then getting that stock list and getting those bill of materials was a very streamlined process. So being in a tool, being in Revit and being able to use a tool like MicroBIM to pull that information out of the database, out of the Revit model, it was essential to being able to meet those timelines, which we were able to effectively do in that case. We were able to get what was needed on site at the right time, and it was a win for us and for the customer.
Does the output of what's designed going to a fabricator, is that process further there streamlined? Is it any different than what the other softwares do today? Is that experience, I'm just thinking right from Ferguson as being a fabricator, and we always have these communication kickoff meetings and email back and forth with the customer with regards to their stock list, because we sit there and verify it ourselves. I'm just wondering if we're improving the accuracy, if we're working within the model and the outcome of what it's producing is better, is that window of time frame and that handoff better?
I think in some respects it is currently, but the great thing about where we are, where we're positioned with this, is the potentials, right? Because and what we're looking to do is we're looking to identify the opportunities to capitalize on the access to the information that we have. So Revit being essentially a big database that you're just building windows into, you have all of this information captured in the Revit model. MicroBIM is processing that information and formatting it into a format that can be used by the fabrication shops. And so now that we're kind of working, we've done the work to work out this process. Now the next thing is, how do we innovate this process? How do we make this process better to align, in line with what you're talking about? If we have access to this data, how do we facilitate the transition of this data from one user to the next user in the workflow of the process? That's where we're looking to innovate the next steps. And so there's some things in the works. There's nothing specifically that we can talk about at the moment, that because we're still kind of testing and piloting those ideas. The opportunities are there and we're ready to capitalize on them.
That was going to be my next question. So looking ahead, the future of MicroBIM, would you call X, what upcoming developments or innovations are you guys looking to either achieve or have with this new suite? Can you give us a taste of some of those things or maybe what the industry is asking of you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've already referred to some of it that are going to be part of the next major release that actually isn't on the market yet, but will be soon. So this is still a coming soon, which is our automated layout tools for sprinklers and piping, our streamlined stock listing tools. So the next steps that we see, the immediate next steps, are continuing to capitalize on the opportunities for automating the calculation process. So we've revamped that tool and we've created we've really improved that process inside MicroBIM X currently, but the next level is what we're trying to get to, which is where we're really capturing more of that information for the users and requiring less information from them to get it done. So things like, we can already identify the spaces in the Revit model, and typically the architectural model that we get has the space identified. So we know this space is a lobby, and we know this space is a classroom, and we know this space is a mechanical room. And so automating that process of identifying the hazard based on NFPA standards, we can do a lot of that for the customer. Now, not for the designer. Now, obviously, it still requires review because sometimes you know something about the space that causes it to be something other than what would be obvious. And so that still requires that designer input, but we can make a lot of those initial connections for the user and then change, instead of that process being an hour and a half process, we can take it down to a 15-minute process. And so those are the kinds of things that we're really looking forward to doing, is really taking that information that's in the Revit model and applying it to the model in an automated way And we do hesitate to use AI. We don't hesitate to use the technology. We hesitate to use the terminology AI because it gets thrown around so much right now. And it's hard to know actually when AI is happening and when it's just machine learning or when it's just effective formulas. But we do incorporate AI into MicroBIM, and we're using especially large language models when it comes to identifying text and being able to associate text appropriately. These are the opportunities that we really have currently for AI. And then looking way down the road, several years from now, probably, we're looking at opportunities for really automating more of the piping and modeling and clash coordination, not only clash detection, but also clash resolution, and really being able to automate a lot of that stuff for the customer. We already do some beginning stages of it where once you identify the clash, you can use MicroBIM tools to automate the resolution of the clash. And so you can go around it, or you can move the pipe down, or you can do all those things automated through our system. But we'll be able to just expand on that automation even more. And so it'll never take away the input of the designer. The designer still needs to be there and confirming everything's accurate, but really take advantage of the information that's in front of us here.
So let me capture two things you mentioned. So we talked about how it's capable of identifying the other properties within the drawings and or using logic to identify, let's just say, what's labeled as a room, a lobby, an office, or what have you. Is it possible that one day it could give you a suggestion of what the most demand area is? Let's just say your higher hazard area, because, as you say, it's able to look at and see what your square footage coverage is per head. Could it do that?
And that is one of the things we're considering, how to make that work. So currently our calculation engine is sufficient to calculate multiple areas at once. And so theoretically, so we're using that to our advantage on several aspects. One of the new features that'll be coming out in calculations, which we should have had already in the system before, but it's just took some time to get there from the technology standpoint, is doing auto peaking of grids. And so designers would be very familiar with what that means about making sure that design area that you've selected is the most demanding area. So when you're on a grid, it's being fed from both ends, you got to make sure you've got the actual most demanding. And so because of some limitations to the way the engine was working, we were not able to do that auto peaking. So it was required to be manual peaking, which is not as effective. We will soon be introducing our tool that allows for that auto peaking of the grid. And so that's there because our calculation engine can evaluate multiple remote areas at one time. So getting to your question, there is a feasible day in the future. I mean, it's feasible that in the future, we'll be able, our calculation system would be able to analyze the piping network and the sprinkler connections and all the parameters that are there and identify what is the most demanding area. Yeah, that would be huge if we can get to that point.
Yeah, because it seemed like, there's classes and seminars taught about how to identify the appropriate calculation area. It can be a head scratcher at times. Like you said, given a grid system, you may think one thing and hydraulically it's another.
That's right.
So that would be really cool because I feel like that would build in some more quality assurance, right? That's where we're all headed.
Yeah.
Just with oversight from, the individual. So there was that. And then the other thing you mentioned as well. So you say that when it runs across a clash, does it give you suggestive resolutions for that clash?
It looks for feedback from the designer at the moment. So what it does is it presents the clash to you. It shows you where the conflict is. And by the way, that clash detection is done inside of Revit. That's one of the other advantages. So again, you're not having to switch to Navisworks or some other software to get to define the clashes. You're able to identify that clash inside of Revit. And so once you identify the clash, then as you see it, the best resolution is usually obvious to the designer looking at it. Like, so I know in this case, it really would be best just to move that whole branch line over, for instance. Or in this case, it may be best just to offset around the clash, the obstacle. And so what we currently do is we give you the options to say, okay, I want to offset the I want to do the offset and just add the fittings to make the offset, or I want to just move the whole line over. So we give the user that opportunity to input that, and then we'll automate the modeling of that for the user. So the user tells us, okay, I want you just to move this branch on over, and then it'll do it. The future versions of that, I mean, that down the road where our mind is going with that automation is to actually identify the routing that clear the most effective routing that clears those flashes. And so the automated tools would actually provide a routing scenario that would be most advantageous. And, you know, there's several different ideas about how we accomplish that are very exciting to think about. A lot of people in design, especially in Revit, talk about generative design, which just means that you're going to produce several different options and you're going to pick the one that's best, right? And so those are the kinds of ideas that we're considering about how we can automate that coordination process in the future. Is how do we create multiple different options, give the user the opportunity to evaluate those options and choose the one they would prefer for the project. These are the future tools that we're hoping to move into.
Yeah, because I think to some extent, right, we all tend to get in habits. We all tend to think, you know, the best place to go is here, or the best position for my branch line is in this area, or my main is at this level or elevation, right? And I think to some extent, we have to remind ourselves, and I think this is where the generative thinking comes in, to think outside the box, right? To use these other suggestions that might be a little more creative, but, you know, in the turn might have better efficiency with regards to hydraulic calculations or with regards to even coordination of hanging that piece of pipe. I think, because that's what comes to my mind, is the often disconnect between the on the computer application and the real world application, right? So it may look great on screen, and then you go to hang it in the real world and you're in a slew area of a bunch of other trades, and or you may not even get a hanger through this area. So it's like, it's got to take both. And I think if you can get to that point where something is giving you better suggestions, allowing you to kind of think critically, but also open-minded, that's kind of where we need to improve. That's where we need to start heading.
Yeah, absolutely. If a designer themselves is trying to do a generative process, that's a lot of effort, a lot of hours spent drawing this scenario and then going over here and drawing this scenario and then going over here and drawing this. So when we can allow the computer to, in an intelligent way, create multiple different options for us and let us select from those, I mean, just, yeah, there's no telling what kind of advantages we'll discover just because of the labor savings that the tools give us. And then another layer of that isn't currently in place, but that is also a future focus for us, is incorporating the pricing information to that. So you got these different options for how you're going to route it. And if we have pricing information tied into the model, then you can actually see the estimated cost of these different options. And so that can start giving you some insight into this, you know, this, while this might not be the way we would normally route this because of the material and or labor installation savings, this is going to be the better route. And so this is the way we would go. And so again, I don't want to promise something that's not there. Those tools aren't there now. That's the future.
Yeah, because that's never, I think as a designer, before I went into estimating, that was not really something you think about, right? You think about, A, how do I route this and stay within codes? And then B, is this easy on the field? You know, and does this look aesthetically pleasing? You don't really sit there and think, okay, well, if I move this entire line, you know, I'll not have to use as much large diameter piping and fittings. I may just have to use a little more small diameter. And, you know, so therefore, cost effectively, that's better. I think it would be great to have that type of stuff. And especially if, I mean, let's just say, I mean, this happens, right? Another trade has to make an alteration, and then all of a sudden it's causing you guys to move. Well, there's costs associated with that, right? And we all hate the word change order, but if that was kind of an option for the program, well, then you could justifiably say, this is going to cost us money, you know, and it's not something you can sit there and say, that's fine. You know, we need to talk about this. Yeah. So that aspect's really cool. I've never thought about that.
Yeah. Yeah, it is really exciting. And when you think about it in connection with the automated layout tools we talked about earlier, I mean, there's a feasible future.
Oh, where, you could look at a whole thing that way, right?
That's right. Where that's the salesperson can take a Revit model, run the automated tools.
In other words, you can have an idea of what a system needs to look like, and then you can have options of what's the most affordable. So I think that's awesome.
Yeah, right on. You know, when you're estimating, you know this as having done estimation in the past, I mean, you're not trying to get it designed perfectly when you do the estimate, but you want to make a good estimate. And so if you're able to use automated tools and get 80% of the design done in just a less than an hour, right, then you really have a lot more information to base your estimate on than some of the other ways of estimating fire sprinkler systems. We're looking forward to those opportunities where we can start improving those workflows and tying that information together better. And so it's just really exciting times for these kind of innovations.
It sounds like you guys have a good, you know, groundwork set out. You've got things in place to grow upon. That's pretty cool. I think if I was an early adopter or an integrator today, I mean, I would look at this as a platform I'd want to move towards, you know, because I'm looking at, okay, let me get familiar with Revit. Let me get familiar with MicroBIM. And then as you guys improve the programs to where, you know, one day they can do some of these things we've just mentioned, how much further would you be as a company? How much better of a quality of a product, sales-wise, efficiency-wise, like you name it. We're going beyond design here, which is crazy. That's awesome.
And that is one thing, I'll capture that real quick. That is one thing that, I mean, now is the time for customers to start making this decision. If you wait till the rest of the market is there and you're having to play catch up, it's going to be very difficult because of the learning curve of Revit. Revit is the challenge to learn how to design in Revit. And so the sooner you can get there, the better you're in a position to take advantage of the innovations that are coming.
So Micah, I guess just final thoughts here. For anyone listening who's interested in kind of seeing the program, whether it be an action or a demo or just getting started, what are the next steps for them? And what do you guys have to offer for those things?
So we're happy to do demonstrations of the software so you can see what the software is capable of. And in order to get to that point, I would suggest you reach out to your Ferguson salesperson. That's going to be your best first step, to go ahead and reach out to that salesperson, and then they can connect you to myself or one of our other MicroBIM designers to handle that demo for you. If you don't have a Ferguson salesperson or you need to reach out some other way, you can go to FergusonFireDesign.com. So that's FergusonFireDesign.com. And then there's an 800 number. It's 877-648-1303. And if you reach out to that phone number, then we can get you set up with a demo or any information that you might want. If you're not ready for a demo yet, we can give you some more information about it.
Okay. Yeah. So a couple different avenues. If anything, go Googling, right?
Go Google. Yeah.
Yep. I'm sure we've got some stuff on our Ferguson page as well with MicroBIM, so they can look us up there. But I will say, Micah, it's been great talking to you today. I've learned a lot from my side of the table from the last time we spoke about MicroBIM. So for me, it's exciting. I dare to say I wish I still had the software and could dabble. I do miss it some.
Yeah, buddy. We could. Yeah.
Not enough to take a seat from you, okay? But I do miss it some.
Yeah.
But no, it's been an absolute pleasure, Mike. You're always a wealth of knowledge. And I myself, honestly, would love the free demo next time you do it with a customer. You know, I just love to be a fly on the wall. So I really appreciate the time today. It's always good talking to you.
Right on. Always a pleasure, Justin. Take care of yourself, buddy.
That wraps up today's episode of Fire Protection Insights, the Fire Safety Podcast. A big thank you to Micah Davis for joining us and giving us a closer look at how MicroBIM Fire is revolutionizing design automation, coordination, and stock listing accuracy. And thank you to our audience for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the show so you don't miss an episode. Until next time, I'm Justin Hassel, and this is Fire Protection Insights, the Fire Safety Podcast, brought to you by Ferguson.